Welcome to You're Not Broken, the only podcast that combines science, medicine, and psychology to re-educate your brain and help you live your best love life. And I'm your host, board-certified female urologist, Dr. Casperson. Hi, friends. Today, I'm so excited. I'm totally fangirling because this talk is all about becoming clitorate. I have Dr. Lori Mintz. She's a feminist author, therapist, professor, and speaker whose life work has been committed to helping people live more authentic, meaningful, joyful, and sexually satisfying lives through the art and science of psychology. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for asking me to be here. I'm delighted.
I already think we're going to be long friends.
I hope so.
So tell us give us an intro. How did you get into sexuality education and therapy?
Well, I've always been really comfortable with sexuality. I'm unusual. I was raised in an unusually sex positive household. My mother was way ahead of her time. So it's just a topic that was always comfortable for me, that uncomfortable for most people. And so I've been a professor and in private practice for over 30 years. And I always ask my clients the question, is there anything about your sex life that you want to discuss? And by and large, a good 90% of them would say yes. And I'm glad you asked, because if you hadn't, I wouldn't have brought it up. And so I went from asking clients about their sex life to really focusing on their sex lives. And then slowly it just sort of evolved into like, this is what I do. This is my gig. And I've written two books, both aimed at empowering women sexually. The first one, A Tired Woman's Guide to Passionate Sex, was really born out of my own and my clients' experiences with having children and then losing their sex drive. And my second book, Becoming Clitorate, was inspired by my students at the University of Florida. I teach psych of human sexuality to hundreds of students a year. And when I started teaching about the orgasm gap, or the difference in orgasm rates between women and men, like, it wasn't just a statistical topic. My students were in pain around this. And in teaching to this, I discovered that a whole body of knowledge had been lost to this generation. And so I would get notes like, thanks to your class, I'm orgasmic. Thanks to your class, my girlfriend's orgasmic. And I thought, I don't want to keep this, what should be common knowledge, to my little classroom at the University of Florida. I want to spread this knowledge more broadly.
Oh, I love it. Talk about this. I think, you know, what's the big buzz right now is a woman's libido and like the myth of how it should be spontaneous no matter what's going on in their life. But I want to ask you this. Don't you think the majority of women are just having boring, what I call bad sex in the first place?
A lot of women are having boring, bad sex. Both because of what their own lives, there's spontaneous desire decreases. We know that. The feeling of being horny, the longer your relationship goes on, the older you get, and the more stressed out you are. So that's contributing. So a lot of women are like either not having sex or having what they call duty sex just to get it over with, rather than really enjoying it themselves. And on top of this, in today's day and age, I cannot believe it's 2021, and we still have not let women know that intercourse is not going to be their most reliable route to orgasm. So we still have a ton of women saying, something's wrong with me because I'm not orgasming the same way my partner does during intercourse.
Totally. The more I am in this world, the more it's like, it's so obvious that like people don't even know that basic stuff. They just like Hollywood and the movies, like all the big movies basically tell you that a woman's completely satisfied by like a 5-minute penis and vagina scene.
Right. In all the movies that you see, if the woman orgasms at all, very little foreplay, which I hate that word, by the way, but we can get into that. The man puts his penis in her vagina and she's like instantly having the best orgasm ever. And it's like, not only is that not realistic in terms of pleasure, but it's a big driver in the fact that 60% of women said they had pain at their last instance of penetrative sex. And most of them don't say anything. They think it's a problem with them, so they don't say anything and just continue. And that's just heartbreaking to me, because sex should not be painful. And if it is, someone needs to see someone like you, a physician, to get it worked up.
Yep, totally. And I would just add on that, if you see a physician and they say everything looks fine down there and you're still having pain with sex, don't stop with just that one physician. Get a second opinion. Because I see tons of people and they're like, I was told it looks just fine. And then I look down there and I'm like, no, you have pain and it doesn't look fine. So don't stop at just one. It looks fine down there. There's my plug for
yes,
pain with
I
sex.
Yes, I agree. Yes.
Tell us the statistics about orgasmic inequality and how this ties into affecting a woman's libido.
So there's been so many studies, but the three I like to cite the most are, there was one study of about 800 individuals. They didn't ask the context of the sex. Was it relationship sex, hookup sex, friends with benefits? But in that study, 39% of women, as opposed to 91% of men, said they always or usually always orgasm during a sexual encounter. Like, whoa, that's a big gap. And it's even bigger in hookup sex. In surveys I've done with my students, only 4% of women say they orgasm during first-time hookup sex. And the stats for men are anywhere from 55 to 95%.
It's like, what are women even doing this for?
Exactly. I tell my students, the other research shows that good sex decreases hookup regret. So make sure it's good, you know, and if not, don't do it. And even in relationship sex, it gets better, but it never closes altogether. 68% versus 95% women, men, in terms of orgasming during relationship sex. So the gap is biggest during hookup sex. It gets smaller with second time hookups. There's studies, friends with benefits, relationship sex, but it never closes altogether. In all sexual contexts, women are having fewer orgasms than men. And I may be jumping ahead, but people say, oh, it's because women's orgasms are difficult or elusive. No, because we know it's not about women's bodies. It's about our cultural institution of how we do heterosexual sex. Because we know when women are alone, 95% reach orgasm easily and in minutes. And when women get it on with other women, even in hookup contexts, they are having more orgasms. So it's not women's bodies. It is the, and I'm not blaming men, they're affected by this cultural lies too. It's the institution, the way we do heterosexual sex.
Totally. And you just totally read my mind, because people will be like, well, and I learned this in urology residency. I was told women are just complicated. We haven't figured it out yet. Instead of like, we're not being taught what we know. We have an organ for orgasm. It's called the clitoris, and we're not taught about it during any sexual education. Our sexual education is like ovaries and uterus, or like the body parts represented.
Exactly. It's like they separate, still in many schools, right? They separate the boys and the girls. Boys learn about ejaculation and girls learn about periods. Those are not the same. One is sexual, the other isn't. We're not, the clitoris is not even named in most sex ed classes. It's like this secret dirty organ. No, it's, as you well know, it's analogous to the penis. The vagina isn't what's analogous to the penis. The clitoris is.
Totally. Let's talk about foreplay, what we should call it instead, why we should call it sex. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the stuff that happens that isn't a penis in the vagina.
Absolutely. So we use the word foreplay, right? As everything that comes before the main event, with the main event being intercourse. And we use the word sex and intercourse as if they were one and the same. And by doing that, we are privileging male sexual pleasure, because we're calling sex the act that men orgasm reliably from. And the acts, oral sex, manual stimulation, vibrator stimulation, that women most reliably orgasm from, as just foreplay, just a warm up. And if the tables were turned and we overvalued female pleasure, we would call foreplay sex and intercourse postplay. But I am not suggesting we turn the tables. I am suggesting we stop using those words, because they reflect and perpetuate this problem. And instead, everything we do together is sex. Period. And there's no lead up to the main event, and there is no main event. You know, having your partner stimulate your clitoris is just as much sex as having your partner enter you with his penis.
Yep. End of conversation. I love it. I see this a lot. The stereotypical, like, postmenopausal woman, she didn't know about atrophy. She didn't know what happens if we don't keep estrogen down there. So now we're dealing, and she is not sexually active much because it hurts. So then things get tighter. And she comes to me wanting to be able to put the penis in the vagina. And I ask her, I say, is your goal just to put the penis in the vagina, or is your goal to enjoy sex? Because we've got two totally separate things and two totally separate, like, avenues that I'm going to go. And universally, they don't have that concept of, like, what do you mean pleasure that isn't putting things in the penis and in the vagina? And, like, it's a whole conversation that, because we're not even, like, educated to think about it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Ian Kerner, who wrote the book She Comes First, who I adore, he's the one that coined the term clitoracy and clitorate and was generous enough to say, sure, use it as your book title. Like, we need more clitorate people. He uses the word outer course being as essential to pleasure, if not more, than intercourse.
I tell women this, and I want to get your opinion on if I should be adding to my spiel. But my like very short story is, like, the woman has the orgasm first, ideally. She needs blood flow. She needs to get into it. If she's then going to put anything in her penis at the end, or in her vagina at the end, for the man to be able to have the orgasm the way he likes to have the orgasm. So it's all about her. It's all about her pleasure. Orgasm, if that's the goal, however she gets her orgasm best, then we finish with that because that's what he likes. Is that a decent, very short synopsis, or would you add to that?
I think it's a great start, and I would add to it. And here's how I'd add to it. And in fact, in my book, I have a chapter where I talk about ways to end this script, right? The sexual script of foreplay, intercourse, quote, sex over. In one of those scripts is exactly what you said. She comes first. Like, have her orgasm first for all the reasons you say, and then have PVI. But there are other scripts that can work as well, because I find that there are a lot of women who really, that this idea that their pleasure is secondary is so deeply ingrained, they cannot relax until their partner's had an orgasm. And for those women, I often recommend also a turn-taking script, but she comes second. But what I say is, do a lot of stimulation, clitoral, oral sex, manual, use lube. Make sure you're aroused enough before the penis goes in the vagina, because if you're not, it will hurt. Then after he has his orgasm, then you get yours with your vibrator, with his hands. Also, you can try to come together, and I do not mean at the same time during intercourse with the mythical simultaneous orgasm. Take your own hand or a vibrator and stimulate yourself during intercourse. That's another way to do it. So I'd start with your script, but offer these other scripts as well.
Love it. Such good advice. So what's your take, because everybody's got an opinion, on scheduling sex?
Huge advocate. Huge, huge, huge advocate of it. In fact, in my first book, A Tired Woman's Guide to Passionate Sex, I have an entire chapter on that, but I don't call it planned sex. I call it trysts. What is a tryst? A tryst is a planned meeting between lovers. We think of it as about affairs. No, it can be with your partner of 10, 20, 30 years. And the reason it works so well is because, think about it. Do you think I would have showed up for this podcast spontaneously? No, we planned it. I didn't just suddenly say, oh, I want to be on a podcast and here I am meeting up with you. Like, we have very busy lives and we have to make room for and schedule the things that are important to us. And when you're busy and stressed, you've got a job, you've got kids, you've got elderly parents, you got housework. So many times it just doesn't happen unless you put it in the calendar. The other thing scheduling it does is for women with decreased spontaneous desire, which is most of us at a certain age and stage, you'll never have sex if you wait to be horny to have sex. But we know, what's a solution? Reverse the equation. Have sex to get horny, rather than waiting to be horny to have sex.
Beautiful. So good. In the book, A Tired Woman's Guide to Passionate Sex, you talk about stress and overwork as top reasons for lowered sex drive. And my women will say like, oh yeah, no, I'm totally stressed. Like they get that. But where do you like get them to like literally take the next step in trying to figure that out? What can they actually do about it? As far as realizing the libido comes up when you don't actually have 10 things on your to-do list, like in your frontal lobe.
Right. You talk to them about, sometimes I ask if they've been on a vacation and what happened on the vacation. And 9 times out of 10, they'll say after a few days of relaxation, they got a little horny for the first time in a year. So that helps. Okay. Well, you can't be on vacation regularly, but we can do things to decrease your stress. And I talk to them about meditation, yoga, lots of sleep, and also that sex itself is a stress reducer. So really helping people. And it's one of the things I find the hardest with my clients because they're busy and stressed. And if you suggest, I want you to do something different, add yoga, add meditation, they're like, how am I going to do that? Because I'm already stressed. Are you not hearing me? You know? And I get that. And, you know, really helping people understand that if you take care of yourself, if you prioritize that, you're actually going to be more productive in the long run. If you get exercise, you get sleep, you have sex, you will be more productive in the long run. And sometimes I have people do this exercise where I ask them to write out what is most important to you, what are your values? 9 times out of 10, it'll be having a good relationship with my partners on that list. And then whatever else. And then I ask them to track their time for a week. And then next to the things that they do, write if it is akin with one of those goals. 9 times out of 10, again, the things they're spending the most time on have nothing to do with what's most important to them. And I'm not saying we can't all run out and quit our jobs. But there are things that I think a lot of women are doing that are energy draining versus energy enhancing. Think of that. I mean, maybe you don't have one, but most women have a friend or two or a relationship they still spend time with that they don't enjoy. They leave feeling drained rather than filled up. Like, get rid of some of those things.
Get rid of it. I don't have one of those. I'm trying to think, who do I not enjoy? No, I enjoy them all.
Or stop doing some things that take so much time. You're not showing my video, but if you did, you'd see that I'm not wearing any makeup today. And it takes me a good half hour when I really do my makeup right to put it on. So I get a half hour of exercise in if I don't put on my makeup. I mean, there's so many creative ways to time shift.
Totally. And I think just sitting in silence or sitting in the doing nothing and dropping into the body, like that's really important for sex too. And women are like, what do you mean you want me to do nothing? And it's like, that's actually like your life's work is to like drop into yourself and listen to the silence and see what, like there's sex is just part of this like amazing life you get to lead. And if you're just like busy all the time and going, and then you want a spontaneous sex drive at the same time, realizing it actually doesn't work that way.
Exactly. And I think that's why meditation and yoga have been proven to enhance sex drive, because it teaches you to just listen to your body sensations, put your mind and your body in the same place and drop into pleasure and yourself and sensation.
Totally. Yeah. My quote is like, for orgasm is you can't frontal lobe that shit.
I love that.
Out of the prefrontal cortex is not where orgasms live. And MRI studies have like shown that. So you say that empowerment in the bedroom leads to confidence in the boardroom. I have a lot of physicians who listen to this podcast, a lot of high powered women with boardroom jobs. Please tell us more.
So I have found over the years that so many women have told me once they felt empowered, equally empowered to have pleasure in the bedroom and to orgasm and assert themselves and say what they want and get what they want, that had positive ripple effects. I have had countless women saying, once I became empowered in the bedroom, I was more comfortable in my own skin. I was more comfortable saying what I want, and it ripple effected out. I'm doing better at my job. I'm much more able to speak up at work. I'm more confident with my children, my friends, everything.
I love that. What do you think it is? Do you think it's like feeling like confident in your body and confident knowing like you have that kind of grounded power?
I don't know what it is, but that is indeed my best guess.
Yeah.
That just know, it's like you're a magician. If you can be a magician for yourself in the bedroom, then you can do anything outside of the bedroom.
I love it. In your Tired Guidebook, you say that there's no pill for desire, and that was written in 2009. Now there's a pill and an injection. What are your thoughts about these new FDA-approved female desire products?
Not a fan. Not a fan at all. I think they're a last resort. And they all, I mean, you know better than me as a physician, they both have serious side effects. And the pill, you can't drink with it. You know, it's just, it's taken on a daily basis. And what we know, I think the reason I'm such not a fan is we know that in studies of women's sexual functioning, the placebo effect accounts for 65% of the findings. In other words, if you think something is going to work, it is. And that's just as important as what you put in your mouth. And I did a study actually where I gave half of the women in the study read A Tired Woman's Guide to Passionate Sex. The other half took a pill. It was an inert pill, but I told them it was this new, exciting, proven desire drug. I got notes. This was an inert substance. And through the study, I got notes from women saying, I hope I can get this pill after because it's changed my life. It was, what was it? It was they were thinking about sex because they took the pill. They were believing it was going to work. It was their mind. Placebo isn't nothing. It does result in mind changes. So what happened is the people who read the book and the people who took the pill made exactly the same changes when they were reading or taking the pill. Okay. 6 weeks later, those who had read the book continued to improve. Why? Because they were using the skills they learned. The people who took the pill went right back down to baseline. So pills versus skills. Skills is always my first line of attack.
100%. And then you get the woman who's like, well, I can't afford the medication, so now I can't have the desire, because they think that the desire is in the pill and then they can't afford it, or insurance doesn't cover it, or for whatever else. And so it's like, and we're still missing the whole education of like, female orgasm doesn't come by putting a penis in your vagina in the first place, right? Like
exactly.
101 before we kind of get pills into it. Cool. I really appreciate you sharing that. And I hadn't heard the placebo was 65 in the women's studies. I had known, just being a urologist, that in the Viagra trials, erection placebo is 40%. So you take a sugar pill, you get an erection because of it.
Yeah. Super and in powerful. Women's studies, I read that it's 65%. I'd have to pull up the actual study that showed that, but 40 to 60, whatever. It's a lot. It's a lot.
I wrote down three women's scenarios, because there's all, every time I talk about the postmenopausal woman, the premenopausal says, what about me? They're all important. So I broke down three scenarios just to get your advice for each kind of scenario. Is that okay?
Oh, fun. That's fun.
Super
yeah.
fun. Okay. So there's three women. I just made them up and I want to hear your advice. So we have a 20-year-old single female just starting out in the dating scene. What would you want to tell her?
Okay. First, I'd say sex is something that is for you, not done to you.
Huge.
I want you to feel equally empowered to get the pleasure that you need and want. And here's some steps to do that. First of all, get yourself a mirror, get yourself a picture of the vulva, find out what you have down there. Because if you don't know, you're not going to be able to use it or teach a partner to. Step one. Step two, masturbate, 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 vibrate, vibrate, lubricate, find out what you like, practice on your own, and then make sure, essential but underutilized advice, get that same type of stimulation with a partner you do alone. And that can mean teaching that partner, it can mean doing it yourself, and train the sex organ between your ears. learn, turn off those sex negative thoughts about sex. And when you are having sex, learn mindfulness, learn complete absorption in the moment. And finally, if a partner is not invested in your pleasure in the bedroom, kick him to the curb, because he's going to be, if he's not invested in your pleasure in the bedroom, he's probably going to be a lousy partner out of the bedroom.
I love it. Such good advice. I'm thinking about this woman now too. I would want to tell her that sex isn't something you owe anybody. You get to do it when you're ready. It's not a way for to get somebody to love you by having sex with them. I'd want to tell her that. And then the lube one that you said, for sure. Oh, yeah. If it's not an 8 on arousal, don't penetrate.
Oh, I like that. Exactly. I often say, just because he's hard doesn't mean, and ready doesn't mean you need to let him in.
Totally. Okay. Next woman. She's a 38-year-old woman, married, these are heterosexual women because they have the biggest orgasm gap. So she's got a couple of kids. She has a full-time job that's kind of high powered. She comes to you and she says, I've lost my libido and I don't enjoy sex.
Okay. Okay. So I'd want to ask her, what does she mean by her libido?
Spontaneous.
Yeah, that's usually what Hollywood. She means. Yeah, I don't feel horny anymore.
I don't feel horny anymore. And I want to want, which I truly believe, like segue, I truly believe like you don't actually want uncontrolled raw desire. Like it actually runs amok when that happens. We just think we want that, but it actually like that goes poorly.
Yeah, I would educate her about spontaneous versus receptive desire and explain to her that it's normative. I hate the word normal. So let's use the word normative. It is normative for you to not be horny anymore. You know, let's look at what's going on in your life and the stressors. And I certainly would help her deal with those things. But then I would talk to her about planned sexual encounters so she can use sex to get horny rather than get horny to have, rather than the reverse. And then I would want to explore with her what is bad about the sex. I would really ask her detailed questions. Tell me about, and this is actually the title of a new book by Ian Kerner, Tell Me About the Last Time You Had Sex. And I would ask her in detail, first we did this, then we did this. And my guess is I would uncover rushed sex, rushing to intercourse, not getting aroused, not using lubricant, not getting the clitoral stimulation she needs. So I would work with her stress. I would work with her entitlement. And I would work with her understanding the power of receptive desire. And if it's fun, it's not duty sex. And it's okay to take some time to warm up. It's kind of like I don't live in a winter climate anymore, but I grew up with one. And I know like it was hard to get the car started sometimes and I had to scrape the ice off. But once I got going, I could drive anywhere I wanted. And it's a lot like that. And I would also finally work to debunk the idea that sex shouldn't change as we age. I think what happens a lot of times is that limerence phase, it's called. When we first meet someone, our bodies are flooded with chemicals. We're horny. Like we can barely do anything but think about that person. And it is a physiological stage and it passes because you couldn't live life in that stage. But it's such an exquisite stage that people think it should stay. And it's not realistic to. And to work to create a sex life that works for your stage of life. There was another book by Peggy Kleinpetz called Magnificent Sex. Although funny, I was talking about it the other day and I had a Freudian slip and I called it Magnificent Sex.
It'll be the second volume.
Yeah, Magnificent Sex. And what they found is couples who have magnificent sex, their first instance of magnificent sex is around age 55. Why? Because they're comfortable in their own bodies. The stress sometimes of their life is decreasing. They're more laughing about it. They're using more outer course, more communication. But you don't have to wait till you're 55. You can do all those things, no matter if you're that 20-year-old or the 36-year-old we're talking about now.
I love it. Let's focus on her for another minute, because she says, I have no idea how to talk to my husband about this. I've been faking orgasms. We've been having the exact same vanilla sex for 25 years. How do I start talking to him about this? We've never talked about sex in our life.
Yeah. So I talk to people like that all the time. I was giving a workshop once and the person said, okay, now I get it, but I've been faking for 30 years. What do I do? Now, if faking goes on that long, it's not necessarily a good idea to say, sit down, I want to tell you I've been faking for 30 years, because that's going to lead to pain and feelings of betrayal and hurt. So I would take a more positive approach. Learn to talk about it outside the bedroom. Learn good communication skills. Then sit down and say something like, I love you. I love our sex life. And I'm interested in kind of mixing it up a little, doing some different things. I listened to this great podcast where I learned that women who get clitoral stimulation have even more intense orgasms, and women who use vibrators have even more intense orgasms. And, you know, I'd like to try some new interesting things with you. I think that would be fun. Are you up for it? And trying to shift the conversation in a more positive way. You can suggest reading a book together, watching some sex education together. There's a great site called omgyes.com. Watch that together. You know, read a book about sex together, talk about it, but open the conversation. You know, and think about it. Have you ever solved any other problem in your marriage without talking about it?
Right.
Probably not.
I love the saying, like, the sex is one of the only things we get no education on and we're assumed to be experts.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Totally. Okay, moving on. We now have a 58-year-old post-menopause. Kids are out of the house. She feels like her husband's a roommate at this point.
Yeah. Well, he probably has been her roommate for many years. They've probably, you know, and she's got some other things to overcome, right? So post-menopausal women, we know part of menopause is estrogen decreases. With a decrease in estrogen is a thinning of the vaginal walls, which can make sex more interpenetrative sex painful, can kind of make entry especially painful, hot flashes, lack of sleep. So first of all, she should see a physician to get worked up for those issues. And as you well know, there's lots of remedies that can help with that that are not dangerous at all. There's a myth about that. So for example, vaginally inserted estrogen, I mean, I'm talking to a physician, so you correct me if I'm wrong, but not absorbed systemically, even safe for cancer survivors. You know, get that worked up. And then if you've never talked about sex, it might be the same kind of thing that, you know, the woman who's been faking, like sitting down, you know, we're at this new stage of our life and the kids are gone. And like, I'd love to have good sex be a great part of our new empty nester phase. Like, can we work? I'd love to work on that together. Go to a sex therapist, you know, do something like that. But, you know, make it like the fun new thing that you and your partner are going to do in this stage of your life.
I love it. What would your advice be if then the guy's like, eh, whatever. Mm. If she's like reaches out and he's just like, eh, would you say then therapy for that to kind of figure out the mismatch and dig deeper?
I would. Yeah. I would definitely. If one partner says something is really important to them, especially sex, and the other partner's like, nah, I think that's time to get into couples therapy with someone, not just a couple therapist, but a couple therapist who understands, specializes in, and is comfortable with sexual conversations, or a sex therapist.
Beautiful. I love it. Those women just got great advice.
Oh, good.
That's awesome. So switching gears, because you and I are both on Instagram, I think those are our bigger platforms for us. What's your opinion about Instagram and Facebook kind of censoring educators and censoring using certain body parts? Where do you see that going, and kind of what's your hope for social media and how we educate people now?
I feel like there's some really great sex educators on Instagram, like you and hopefully me, giving like bite-sized but important scientifically based information. And for that to be censored I mean, it goes back to our puritanical belief that, you know, sex is dirty and bad and we shouldn't talk about it. So I'm very upset about it. And at the same time, while there are some great sex educators, there's also on Instagram and TikTok and Twitter, I mean, no matter where you look, there are also people who say they're experts spreading falsehoods. So I would say follow doctors, sex therapists, people who are credentialed. Get your advice, your ideas from them, not your random like 18-year-old TikTok video maker who tells you that, you know, you can get pregnant from oral sex. I mean, there's just so much misinformation out there. So consume the information, but do it critically.
I love it. And you don't need to buy a $200 Goop vagina flavored scented candle.
Oh.
Stop making Gwyneth Paltrow rich, people.
Yes, exactly.
She already has lots of money. So tell us, I have the links in the show notes of both of your books, your website, your Instagram, so people can follow you on there. Tell us what's coming up for you in the future. What are you excited about? What's next on your plate?
I don't know the answer to that question. To tell you the truth, if you have any advice, I'll take it. I'm considering writing another book. It's just forming in my head, but at the same time, talking about that stress thing, I'm very carefully thinking about, do I still have the energy to do that or not? And I'm really loving doing sex education like this podcast. So I've been giving a lot more talks throughout the pandemic virtually from home in my pajama pants, which I enjoy thoroughly. So I think a lot more speaking and education and maybe another book.
I love it. I feel like you and I are going to meet on a stage somewhere at some point.
I would love that.
I know
that.
It's going to happen. I'm going to start manifesting.
Manifest. That's that new thing, right?
Yeah.
And for all the listeners, start manifesting orgasms, but that's not going to get you there. Get a vibrator and some lube instead.
Yeah. You can't frontal lobe it. You got to feel it in your body. You got to go to your pelvis. Totally. Well, Dr. Mintz, thank you so much for meeting with me today.
Thank you. This was a delightful conversation. Thanks for having me on.